This episode of I Ride a Bike is brought to you in part by Treadwell Training. Whether you're looking to prep for a race series, have your sights set on a long adventure ride, or you just want to up your conditioning and nutrition, professional cycling coach Derek Treadwell will get you where you need to go. His personalized and friendly approach offers principle-based coaching for cyclists of all levels. To learn more, visit treadwelltraining.com. Hi, I'm Seth Ballier, the host of I Ride a Bike, where each episode we follow one basic premise: to never grow old, one ride at a time, and the stories that follow.
Take me back to the times when we would grab our bikes and ride the days into the night. Though our eyes would soon be open, for the moment we were golden.
Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm took a nice fun little drive up here to Bethel, Maine today, a beautiful fall day, and I'm excited to be sitting down with the director of mountain biking and cycling here at Gould Academy, Derek Treadwell. Most people just call him Tread, but welcome to the podcast.
Oh, happy to be here. Yeah. Super stoked.
Yeah, it was great getting a quick little tour through the facility here and seeing what you guys got going on here. Looks pretty fantastic compared to my memories of my high school. I wouldn't put them in the same category, is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing. The opportunities here are amazing. You know, you're standing here looking over the mountains, seeing the fall color change. It's pretty amazing.
It's not a bad place to be.
Yeah.
With a cup of tea or coffee or whatever your whatever your choice is. So
exactly.
Yeah. So I'd like to start off with the basic question for most people, and why do you ride a bike?
Yeah, I ride a bike. I mean, I've been riding a bike since I was, 4 or 5 years old. But I think at the end of the day, it's really about just moving outside, being able to move outside and just be outside in nature, the woods, being able to, see a lot. It's amazing what you can see in a 4 or 5 hour ride. You know, the amount of animals, the amount of just really weird, cool, bizarro things you see at times. I mean, I have some things that we can't even talk about on the radio here. I've seen, but yeah, just the opportunity to get out there.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Exactly. They're being able to take in your surroundings. You know, walking is a nice way to do it, or hiking, but it's so slow. So it's like a nice mix of, getting a little faster, but taking it all in,
Yeah. And different seasons. It's amazing. Like in the spring, you start to get the new smells, in the air, mm-hmm. and you're going through these thermal pockets.
Yeah,
and
right.
You have this warm and cold air and these different smells of the world waking up again, It's pretty awesome.
Pretty amazing. So where did you grow up?
I'm originally from Old Town. Well, I'm actually from a suburb of Old Town, Maine.
Is there a suburb of Old Town, Maine, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Milford, Maine.
Right on. Cool.
On the Penobscot River there. Yeah.
Beautiful area. Kind of out in the country a little bit.
Yeah, country. Yeah, country. Lots of woods.
Yeah.
If you step behind my house where I grew up, behind my house, I mean, you really don't hit paved roads until you get to, Canada or Route 9 up right. to Calais.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So the taking a little hike to get air quote, get lost, you could literally just get lost, though.
Yeah, just step out your back door.
See you later.
It's like, I grew up on snowmobile trails. We had snowmobile trails that left directly from the back of my house. And so if I wasn't in the winter, in the winter, I'd be on a snowmobile. Mm-hmm. In the summer, I'd be on a bike, mm-hmm. Riding through the mud and muck and goo and the snowmobile trails.
All the fun things. Yeah, yeah. Right on. That's cool. Yeah. So growing up in Old Town, do you remember your first bikes that you that became part of your life?
Yeah. I mean, really the first, that's great. I mean, when I was young, we had BMX bikes, yeah. The Huffies and things like that. I would say my first proper bikes were high school, middle school to high school. I had a neighbor that I remember got this vintage, it was new, but it was one of the vintage GT Timberlines. Mm-hmm. And it was like this chrome, very old school mountain bike, but it was so cool. Chromed out, just chrome fork, chromed out frame. It was beautiful. And And I kind of always lusted after something like that. And
totally. Then, yeah. Was that one? Was that one of the original triple triangles? And stuff
I think
then,
this
right?
was pre triple.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the GTs that had a little GT emblem on the behind the seat tube. It was pre triple triangle. This the original Timberlines.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
I think that my dad had a Timberline at one point, but it was a little bit later on. It was one of the ones when they had the experimental oval front chain ring or something like that.
Biopace.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember when he got that, it was like this new technology. And I think at that point I was maybe still on my BMX bike, but I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. You know, it's like how much faster and farther I can go on his bike. But he had a lot of pride in that bike. And let's just say I wasn't allowed to really ride it that often. So occasionally I'd get a good day on it, but you know.
Yeah, right. Well, it's funny. We had one of my best friends in high school's brother had gone out to Colorado Mountain College, and he was in Steamboat, and he was all into the mountain bike scene. So he was like our first introduction to like real mountain bike when I was freshman in high school. And, you know, and from there, I remember I had actually bought the same bike that he had, not the actual bike, but my size and the exact same bike. It was his old vintage stump jumper. No, it was a Rockhopper comp at that point. I don't know if you remember those orange ones.
I don't know. Yeah, they weren't. At that time, I wasn't really. I mean, I had a KHS. I guess this was like 1992 was my first mountain bike. So once I had my $350 KHS, that's the best bike I could afford, and there was no sense in looking elsewhere for things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And for me at that point, I wasn't really mountain biking. It was. I mean, I'd go on some like power line trails and stuff but it was just a mode of transportation and
we spent a lot of hours out there on the ride. I was a runner in high school, mm-hmm. but I also rode a lot. You know, I would ride whenever I could and through the summer. So
so did you ride, to back up in the chronological, did you ride bikes a lot as like a little kid, like 5-year-old kid?
Absolutely.
Like that?
yeah
What was that like growing up in Old Town? And
I grew up on a main road. Okay. So I was only allowed on that main road to go about a mile, less than a mile up the road in either direction to my aunt and uncle who lived about a half a mile north, and then my grandmother who lived in a little trailer park about half a mile south.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my parameters. But
was it shoulder riding or was there
there was a sidewalk.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was ripping along the sidewalk. By the Milford Motel. my family did a lot of camping.
Yep.
We did loads of camping. It was a cool experience when I was a kid up north, Greenville, mm-hmm. north of Greenville, different areas like that. So that was, we always had a bike. The bike always came, you know, and it would be all day. Oh, where'd he go? Oh, he's out on the bike. You know, that's just how it is.
Did your parents ride, or you have siblings or anything else? Or was it just you? They just basically throw you on your bike and say, come back before dark.
That's pretty much how it worked out. Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, it was, you know, like saying, is the bike in the summer and the snowmobile in the winter.
Yeah.
I'd go out on the snowmobile for 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours at a time. And I'd be back before it got dark or even after dark.
Right,
you know?
Right.
This is pre-cell phones.
Totally, yeah, for sure.
Like, what?
Yeah.
12 years old out there. Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, the parents would be reported for like child neglect like that, sadly. Mm. But, you know, well, maybe not in northern Maine, but, you know, in some other...
But you learn so much about yourself and your own capabilities. I mean, if you get that snowmobile stuck, you know, or you break a chain on a bike, like you're responsible for getting back, you know, and getting it out. And it's really cool.
Do you ever remember being any harrowing situations as a kid, like breaking a chain out in the middle of nowhere and trying to get through those struggles?
Well, yeah, I actually remember being out on this snowmobile trail. Oh, man, we were out past... it's Call Road Snowmobile Club. It's a, you know, in Milford, it's this pretty big snowmobile club. They do drag races in there. And I'm just giving you a look at what my youth was like.
Yeah, I love it.
The snowmobile drag races.
Yeah.
And I remember being out and it was like deer fly season, you know, just deer flies everywhere. And we were out in the mud and just being, you know, just whatever, out there for a couple hours, and my crank fell off. And I had
just completely fell right
just
off.
It just had... you know, they're pressed on. Those old cranks were pressed on,
right,
and somehow
right.
it worked its way off. And I remember being like, this is not fun.
This is not a fixable thing. Like,
this is not fun. This is, it's unwalkable because the horse flies are so bad and the flies are so bad. So I remember that was probably my first experience with a longer run. I probably ran 8 or 9 miles
really?
With a bike yeah. back to my house.
With the bike, yeah.
Yeah, because you couldn't walk. The flies were so bad, yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so just,
were there any hills at least that you could like coast down or anything?
Oh,
or?
I don't remember. Yeah. I mean, it was all on like back, you know, right. old snowmobile trails, overgrown snowmobile trails.
That sounds so. Miserable.
It's I mean, really
even,
fun.
Even these days, you know, when you're trying to outride the black flies or the deer flies or whatever it is, it's still no fun. I mean, you put those sticky tape things on your helmets or whatever.
Oh, right.
But when you're, 12-year-old kid, forget about it, you know.
And no, you know, of course you don't bring any food or water
either. Of course
either.
Not. You know, like,
there's no food and you don't know what bonking is, but you just know you're mad at the world.
Yeah, right. Totally. Right.
So.
I was just talking about the other day that, I mean, for all the miles, I mean, and they were a lot of miles for as a kid on a BMX bike, you know, riding over these dirt roads and dirt hills, you know, 5 or 8 miles each way. I don't remember ever having water with me, ever.
No.
Like, just, it was just me and a t-shirt and, like, some sneakers and go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe we would, like, literally drink out of streams occasionally. I kind of remember sure. that. But, I mean, that's country living, you know? But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, or, like, you know, 50 cents and you grab a Coke at the corner store. Yeah. You know, you grow by the old mom and pop's corner store.
Yeah. Find a hose in someone's yard
somewhere. Yeah, the hose. Yeah, for sure. That's funny. Yeah, I don't remember it. And no helmet either.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, right.
Come on, if you had a helmet on and you crashed and you broke your helmet, you were out $50.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, save the money and don't buy a helmet. Yeah,
exactly.
You can always bounce back when you're 10, 12 years old, right? Yeah, that was the thought anyway, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember there being even helmets as an option though. I remember, you know, seeing maybe like older people who were probably like 40 at the time, you know what I mean? But with like those styrofoam white helmets, you know,
classic.
But I don't remember like there being such thing as a kid's helmet, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they existed.
Yeah, it's weird. I haven't found anybody who's confirmed that they did exist, so I'm just gonna say they didn't. You know? I can picture people maybe wearing like an old football helmet or something. Maybe if they were like trying to do like a big jump, they put a football helmet on, but
like motocross helmet,
right,
or something
like that.
Seen
you know,
some of those. I remember. I mean, I grew up on dirt bikes and snowmobiles, and we didn't even wear helmets on those.
Yeah, of course not.
You know, I remember wearing a helmet on a snowmobile. Because it was warmer.
Right, sure, right.
You're like, well, this is a lot warmer.
It has nothing to do with the safety aspect,
No.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
So you're a runner, though. You said all since you were, I mean, maybe since that first time getting chased by deer flies.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But endurance has always been a part of your life then.
Yeah, I mean, I was more of a shorter distance runner, like half mile miler through high school and college and then after college. But the bike was always a consistent theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're injured as a runner, you're on the bike,
right?
You know, you're doing big group rides, you're doing rides. Like, so it's interesting that the change with me was when the bike became normalized rather than running, you know, because for so long the bike was something I did when I couldn't ride or when I couldn't run.
Yep.
You know, I would ride rest periods or just around for fun. But then it became somewhere in my mid 20s, it really became the... It became normalized, if that, you know,
Was it always mountain biking for you then? I mean, I know you're mostly sort of known, or I mean, that's what you're doing here a lot of,
but yeah,
mountain biking, but
well, it started in that whole mountain bike craze in the 90s,
right? Sure.
You know, when everybody, you know, there were mountain bikes everywhere and the trail infrastructure wasn't there yet.
Right.
And then, no, I spent a lot of time on a road bike.
Mm-hmm.
I did a bunch of road racing.
You did? Okay.
You know? Yeah.
How did you get into road racing or any racing at all? Let's back up. What was your first bike race you ever got into?
Well, I did a little bit of racing in high school.
Okay.
There was some smaller races, you know, things like that. But not, you know, nothing. There used to be a really good main series, little main cross-country series that doesn't exist anymore. I would say that it was really in my late 20s when I started racing bikes, like properly racing bikes. I got into more road at first, did a bunch of triathlon as well, did some like draft legal triathlon, and then started into like Xterra, off-road triathlon and mountain bike racing. And then I realized just how much fun the bike was and how much more interesting it was than running.
Yeah, right.
And then it was really just about the bike at that point.
Right.
Was
there an actual moment where maybe you were in the middle of a triathlon, the running portion, you're like, why am I doing this? I just want to ride bikes from now on, kind of thing. like a sort of a light bulb moment where you just said, I'm just going to hang up the shoes and mostly just go for rides now?
Yeah, I don't think there was a light bulb moment. Yeah. There was, I mean, I had a moment when I kind of transitioned out of triathlon. I remember being at a triathlon and hanging out and looking around and being like, yeah, this isn't my jam.
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
And then getting into more like mountain bike and endurance mountain bike and gravel and being like, oh yeah, this is it. Like,
yeah.
This is just this is a fun scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's community. You know, people are stoked to be here. They're not nervous about swimming and jumping in the water at 6 a.m. And,
right.
You know, it's just a different type of intensity.
Right. Yeah. Was it, I mean, so it sounds like it was like obviously the camaraderie around being around all these other cyclists, things like that, that was a big draw and just the fun of it all.
Yeah.
Was it also because you were better at it than running maybe too? Or, I mean, did you find you were able to be more competitive in cycling than running, or was it not really a part of it?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. Cause I running was a big part of my life for a long time.
I mean, you're kind of a track star in UMaine, right?
I was able to compete. I think had I maybe started in pure cycling a little younger, the trajectory might've been a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's weird. I mean, I think it's something that I just enjoyed more.
Right.
That's really the end all be all of it. I just enjoy the bike more than running.
Yeah.
I enjoy coaching the bike in a lot of ways more than running. It's much more dynamic, especially when you start working with younger group. Like, you know, it's just the type of riding and training and just the amount of fun you can have is just more.
Yeah, right.
It's just more.
I definitely tend to agree with you on that for sure. I mean,
yeah.
For me, running is like, I only have a half an hour. I want to burn X amount of calories. So running sometimes can be a faster way to do that. But that's the only reason I will go running is because I feel like I have to burn calories in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And that's like the dumbest reason to do most anything.
Anything, so, you know. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I still enjoy running occasionally in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I find, you know, I do a lot of like snow running in the winter.
Sure.
But it's more exploration.
Yeah.
It's more about like putting in an audiobook or a podcast,
sure. Yep.
You know,
yep.
And getting out because I don't want to be on a trainer. And
right.
Being outside is more important to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's to top off the dreadful things in my mind is to be on a treadmill in a gym in the middle of the winter.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
It's like, no, I that's just so low on my list of things that I would do with my time that I would make an excuse to never do that if I could. So.
Oh, and just to be, I mean, the winter time is a beautiful time to be outside.
Yep.
You know, you get all that sun in your eyeball, you know, coming from the sun, the sky and the ground, you know, that reflection. It's brilliant.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So how did you get into then really pursuing mountain biking? Because I know that you started doing a lot of travel mountain biking races and things like that.
Yeah. I started, and I would say in my like late 20s, I really started focusing more on the mountain bike and traveling and realizing like, wow, this is, I'm racing at a pretty high level here. I have some capacity for this, even though my skill level quite wasn't, in terms of, you know, technical skills, maybe that those needed to grow a little bit and they, you know, they have since. But I started doing a lot more like of the bigger, kind of the bigger culture events, like national ultra endurance events, like 100 milers, 100K races like Leadville.
Right.
You know, just the big fun, go camp the night before, hang out, you know.
Why was it? I mean, was it? Why was it the large endurance stuff appealed to you more than the, you know, the 50K or even, you know, something like that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question too. I think I look back on this. I spent a lot of my life flying across the country to drive to a track and race for like less than 4 minutes.
Right.
And then flying back. It just seemed frivolous.
Totally,
you know,
yeah.
It seemed just ridiculous.
Yeah, it does.
Now when I get
when put I it like that in such simple terms, it seems ridiculous.
I'm like, what? So you know, it just became more appealing. I mean, I've raced a bunch of cyclocross as well, but again, that just seemed a little short for like the amount of preparation and that was required to go and race for 40 minutes. You
right.
know, I just really enjoy being able to get out there and it's much less frantic than some of the shorter races, you know, you get out, it's a group, it's not this like crazy frenetic energy of people banging into each other.
Total different breed of people that do these ultras, right?
Yeah. And just marathon. I think the 100K, so for instance, a race like Carabasset 100, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's like a perfect race, perfect distance.
Yep. The 100 is a perfect distance?
Yeah, for me. Yeah, right. I really enjoy that. Yep. It's like a 4 to 5 hour event.
Yeah, right. For you.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, but I really enjoy that amount of time racing. Yep. You know, I feel like that's an event that you can still race and you know, that's hard. Like 4 hours when you're fit and you're trained for it.
Right.
Like you're racing hard for 4 hours. Where, where you get some of the cross country races, which again, cross country is tremendously fun. I love cross country as well. It just doesn't appeal to me as much anymore. You know, the full gas, you know, snot running down your nose sort of thing, you know,
It's over. I mean, yeah, you don't get into that sort of mental like state. I mean, I guess what is that state where you in the long where you just kind of sink into yourself and you kind of just you're there and you become part of a machine. You know.
Yeah, so mindful. I know there's a lot of different terms for it now, like flow state. Mm-hmm. Some people call it, and you know, it becomes a meditative place.
Right.
And you know, there's a lot of I love the aspect of like the different stages you go through in these races, you know, because you go through the first half hour and you look at your watch and you're like, holy crap, we're going hard. There's no way I'm going to be able to roll this for 5 hours.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is crazy, you know, and you're like shoving food in your face. And then you're like, you get through, you know, an hour and a half and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, this is still hard, but I'm settling in. And like, and then at like 2.5 hours, you're like, oh boy, this is tough. I still got another hour and a half or 2 hours. And you're, so it's just, there's so much self-talk that happens.
Sure.
You know. And you can be your own best enemy, your own worst enemy. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
It is funny how much you can control it. I mean, anybody who's ever ridden in a race or even just goes for longer rides knows that if you get in your head, like, oh my God, this sucks. I can't believe I'm halfway through this. I still have to go. You get that mental state. You're not going to enjoy any of it. You're not going to do nearly as well. You're going to literally have the same amount of gas in your fuel tank.
Absolutely.
But if your mental state says, "I'm this is awesome. I'm getting into this positive mindset," it's like you can crush it. But it's a lot in the brain, right?
You know, it is about enjoying going hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and enjoying pedaling your bike hard. I mean, big deal. Like, you know, if you think about training, you know, a lot of people get you have a hard training day or interval day, and they go, it's hard. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's, you enjoy going hard. Like, that's what you enjoy doing on a bike. Why are you not enjoying doing intervals?
Right.
You know, and I have to say the same thing to myself. Like, wait, this is actually what I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So why are you bummed out about it?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, or like you get into a race situation and things don't go great and, you know, you have to call an audible in mid-race, you break a chain, something happens, you know, you recalibrate, you pivot, mm-hmm. and you get on with it.
Right.
You know?
Totally, yeah. And at the end of the day, you're riding a bike. So
at the end of the day, you're riding a damn bike, you know?
How bad could it be?
You know? It's a brilliant way to move around, you know? It's a brilliant way to just see things.
Yeah.
And you know, and I always find like being nicer to other people on the course always can help with that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have some people, they just, you know, their mentality, they just get into this race and, you know, if you're trying to get around someone, they're just grumpy and you're like, why?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Like, just be nicer. It's going to help your whole outlook on the whole event.
Yep.
Just be nice.
Yep.
Be kind and, you know, and show other people that you're enjoying it because they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it definitely transfers between people. And I mean, in anything you do, you know, even walking down the aisle in a grocery store, you know, if you're in a good mood and you're smiling, you can often turn someone else's day around. But if you're just grumpy and, you know, bumping into things, whether on a bike or pushing a cart, right?
So, yeah, I don't want to hang out with that guy.
No, not at all, right?
You know, so.
Right. But though those people sometimes, the little extra kick of fuel you need to just pass them and keep on going.
It's
and,
true.
And just smile and not look back.
That's true. So. Yeah. Kind of like subtly, like give them the fingers, you go by kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Or at least a mental one. You know, you got to keep it positive outwardly. So.
Yes, they good. Thanks.
Right.
Maybe we cut that.
No, we'll leave it. It's okay. No, I think everyone can has been there at least once before.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But in your mountain bike, when you're really getting into it, were there any races that were super memorable for any reason?
Yeah, probably one that comes to mind is, this is only a couple years ago, I was racing down in Georgia, this really cool race called Fool's Gold. Took a bunch of people that I work with down there and we were racing and I ended up crashing on this like stream bed descent pretty hard. and broke my wrist and smashed my helmet and, you know, and I was couldn't hang on to the bike.
Legit crash.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. I'm pedaling back on these fire roads and this big old black bear comes running out of the woods. And keep in mind, like, I'm in this place of like wonky, right, like feeling sorry for myself. And this black bear comes running out and he's on the side of this fire road. And I'm not kidding. Like, he was with me for probably half a mile.
Wow.
Just running beside me, just off the road, stomping through the woods, not chasing me, just running. It was one of the coolest experiences.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and most of these.
It must have scared you a little bit.
It was a little weird, but yeah. I don't know. It wasn't scary.
Yeah.
I was more like, wow, this is super cool. Like,
wow.
And, you know, and there was no one around. And I had another super cool experience was this race called, it was in Maui. It was Xterra World Championships. And the swim is an open water swim in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, you know, I was pretty new to the sport. And I'm swimming over sea turtles. I'm not kidding. Like, there are these giant sea turtles all over me. Like, all over the place underneath. You know, it's crystal clear water here in Maui. And just coming up and being like, there's sea turtles, you know, pointing around to people. Right. And people are like, what?
And everyone else is like, we know, we've done this before.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, there's sea turtles everywhere, which is pretty cool.
That's a really cool experience.
Yeah.
I mean, just being in nature and then really experiencing something like that, too. I mean, you're hard-pressed to find anybody who loves the ocean that also doesn't love sea turtles, right?
Right, you know? Right, exactly. And
talking to you, Eric Brackett, my buddy. He's a sea turtle fan through and through. So.
Oh, it was so neat. And, you know, we're talking like 20 feet away, sea turtles. And you just, I would say most of my really interesting experiences on the bike are seeing wildlife, mm-hmm. seeing things like, you know, coming across an otter, hanging out and stopping for 10 minutes to hang out and watch this otter, or, you know, some eagles, you know, seeing an eagle take a squirrel directly in front of you,
right.
Like literally, like, you know, 20 meters in front of you, come down in the middle of the trail, grab a squirrel and take off,
right.
And
yeah.
fly, you know, during, you know, in front of you on the trail, or seeing coyote and bear and moose. And, you know, you spend a lot of time out there, so you see some cool things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, do you ever, roll with a camera at all on your helmet?
I don't. I don't even own a camera.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a cell phone.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'm just not a photo guy.
Yeah. I'm not either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Katie makes me bring a camera with me sometimes so we can get those shots occasionally, you know, of something. But for the most part, the reason I was sort of asking is this is from my dad sort of teaching me. He was always saying, like, it's nice to take photos, but it's better to take them with your mind, because then you can, the memory sometimes is greater.
It's
than
greater.
Yeah. So you remember that eagle and the sound and all the seeing it flying up the trail in front of you, right? And you know, that mental image of it. So I was getting at was basically, I don't ever ride with a camera. I don't have a GoPro on my helmet or anything like that. I want to be in the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the important thing is being able to stop and observe.
Mm-hmm.
I think people so often they get into this mode and they can't slow it down. And another really, really cool experience is, I don't know if you're familiar with these eagles, they get into this thing called like a death spiral, like a mating ritual.
Oh, yeah. I've seen videos of it. Yeah.
I saw one in person. It was incredible.
Wow, really?
Incredible. Yeah. You know, I happened to be...
Did you know what it was before you saw it happening?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I was like, what is going on?
I'm like, what? You know, because they would really hook claws and, you know, at 200 feet in the air and just plummet in a circle. And right before they get to the ground, they would come apart and fly away. And they did this for about 20 minutes.
Magical.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Just having the opportunities. And that's that whole thing with like coaching and coaching high schoolers and just helping them like have these experiences.
Right.
Like, how cool is that, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get this opportunity to in a safe setting for them, relatively safe. You know,
they're wearing helmets. So
more
I mean,
controlled setting. Yeah, they got helmets on. And, you know, and bikes that don't have like 73 degree head tubes anymore. Right.
26 inch wheels.
And yeah, that, yeah. Yeah. And just to show them how cool they can, you know, how many cool experiences they can have mm-hmm. on a bike.
Yeah.
And even going hard while they're doing it, or, you know, just really just learning about themselves and just basically.
Yeah. Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then I want to come back and hear more about the experience of teaching these kids and your experiences with coaching.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll be right back after these messages.
born to fly. Hoppe's new aerodynamic bicycle is here. AeroWind. With an aerodynamic frame and aerodynamic alloy components. Designed so now you can cut through the air. The Hoppe AeroWind. Ride it and fly. Hoppe, the ultimate riding experience.
Available at Toys R Us.
Finally, the days of having dirt back under the tires is upon us. Well, maybe some mud and a few sketchy potholes, but it's spring, and I for one am stoked. And to get you ready for another great season, all you have to do is stop by AllSpeed's amazing new flagship store, conveniently located right off the Portland Trail System at 936 Brighton Avenue. In addition to a full range of bikes and accessories for riders of all levels, the super friendly staff at AllSpeed is ready to help with everything from your basic spring tune-up to a full custom build. And be sure to keep an eye out for a season of fun events, parties, and shenanigans. With convenient locations in Portland, Carabasset Valley, and Bethel, Maine, AllSpeed is the local shop for everything bike. For more information and to check out their latest hot deals, please visit AllSpeed.com. AllSpeed, the official bike shop of the podcast. And we're back with Tread. We left off. He was getting into a little bit of his coaching and some of the fun aspects of that. So I want you to tell a little bit more about your experiences and these kids that come in, and I just want to hear a little bit about how all that goes.
Yeah. Here at Gould, we kind of made the investment. This is my second year at Gould. I came over last year, really looking to be a driver of building this program into a big kind of working on being a Devo team, mm-hmm. as we grow. And one of the first decisions we did here, or I did, and, you know, with the help of the administration, we actually brought an enduro aspect of the team in. So we have a big enduro component. And we hosted basically the first high school enduro last year at Mount Abram. That happens to be next week. October 5th. Cool. Yeah. So we'll have about 100 athletes from Maine and a few from New Hampshire coming over to compete in the enduro.
Right on. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So, yeah. So we started this enduro side of things, and we also have like a cross country racing side of things too. The enduro is just, I just love the world of enduro. It's a little more free form than mm-hmm. cross country racing, mm-hmm. and it's just the vibe is really good. It's very community based. They hang out, they go ride parks, that's super fun. We have a bunch of athletes that cross over as well that do both. Because the cross country aspect is great too. These kids get this race experience, as well. It's a little more like structured in terms of the training mm-hmm. aspect, but I think that's a really positive experience for a lot of these guys. They're learning how to like read their bodies, how to eat, how to build a little bit better lifestyle for themselves as they get older and grow. Yeah.
Do you, so I want to stay with the coaching aspect, but did you ever do any enduro kind of stuff or downhill stuff?
No, not much. Yeah. No. Yeah. In fact, the first bike park I was ever at was at Abram last year.
Oh, really?
I got here. Yeah. I mean, I've done, downhills and on trails, but nothing formal.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No start gate at the top.
Right. Totally different style for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. I understand, there's some pretty neat physiology aspects too, that not to get into the weeds. I'm not going to get into the weeds with any of that here today, but it's a pretty neat sport from the perspective of, you think these guys are just riding their bikes, but we had five or six riders competing at this event this past week called Trans New England.
Yeah, right, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Super cool. Yeah. They had a stop in North Conway and a stop at Abrams. Our kids were able to compete, and they held their own, man. It was fantastic.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you look back and you're like, wow, over 2 days, these guys climbed 10,000 feet and did 50 miles, basically. 50 miles of riding and 10,000 feet of climbing.
That's a lot. Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's actually, she's fully kitted out in the I Ride a Bike pants and shirt and everything. So, but she did the trans this last week.
Yeah, we one of my
seen those pictures from all the rides and climbing and carrying the bike up the mountain and all this stuff. It's just for the transfer. It's just pretty amazing to watch. It's not. It's above my abilities right now, but you know, it looks amazing. So
yeah. It's kind of like what gravel.
Go Lindsay.
Oh, that's cool. Actually, one of my our head enduro coach Ava Jackson. She's fantastic. She met Lindsay.
Oh, yeah,
They were talking over there, so she was over with our crew.
Cool.
And she did a couple stages as well.
Right on. That's great.
But I almost feel like, you know, the trend in cycling right now is in a lot of ways is going more towards that like free form, fun, get out, enjoy. Mm-hmm. And you look at, you know, really the decomposition of road cycling.
Yeah.
And you see what's like. Road cycling just, you know, in terms of racing as well, like you see, it's just not as it can have a tendency to not be as friendly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then you see this big shift to gravel,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like, whoa, gravel is cool.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's like the free form version of road. You're getting out, you're still getting some hard work in, you're riding with your buddies, you're seeing really cool things, having cool experiences. I feel like enduro is almost the incarnation of that with the mountain bike side of things.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like, I'm just for the first time kind of seeing a correlation now that you pointed out between like back in the Marin County days, you know, people starting, these are all road racers, you know, back in California. And then they would build out these clunkers and the free form aspect of it and just hauling ass down these mountains, you know, with whatever they could figure out. And so I see that there's some similarities there, right? I mean,
the
free flow aspect
and you create this little counterculture.
Yeah.
You know, you're creating this little counterculture, and it's super cool. You know, it's got its own language. It's got its own vibe and gravel's the same way. It's creating its own counterculture. And that here at Gould, that's the direction we're going, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, absolutely. I think the cross country racing is a huge part of the sport. I love it. It's in my heart. It's, you know, it's something we want to develop and there are racers that want to develop. And then we have this enduro side of things that I just think is beautiful.
Right.
And you know, growing that and continuing to take these kids to super cool places to ride and just, you know, we're going to head out to, you know, we're talking about doing a summer trip to possibly Whistler Bike Park. You know, we go to Bentonville, Arkansas in the spring. We, you know, it's just about these experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then in the spring, we also have mountain bike now as well. And we're really trending towards that gravel scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids they're loving it. We did a few gravel races last year and I think everyone's experiences there are great. You know, even if it just takes away from the pure result focus aspect.
Right. Sure.
And I think sometimes racing, we get so caught up in the results.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's anxiety provoking. And I think as we can still, you know, there's still places for racing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think that there's some, you can bring these other events in that are, a little less result focused, more experience focused, and much more enriching for these kids.
Do you bring in any aspects of like what you're saying earlier on about how when you go riding, you know, you stop and watch the otter swim or the eagle flying over?
Oh, heck yeah.
Do you bring those aspects into with the training with the kids?
Oh, heck yeah.
It's not just go, go, go.
No.
Okay.
I think what can happen is, I'm there kind of reading the situation and always every day there's audibles. You know, you're always calling an audible.
Yep.
Like you may have something planned where you're like, oh, we're going to do this. And then you get out there and you're like, yeah, the conditions aren't right. We're not in the right area. I can tell the headspace isn't right. No, we're going to do this instead. But, you know, they're still going to have that. We're still going to see gains and, you know, we're going to have that experience.
Right.
You know, maybe we're just going to ride out to a swimming hole today and ride and swim and come back, you know? I think it's important to read the situation and just, understand that it's okay to change things up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think coaches and athletes that sometimes they just, it's important to understand that, you don't need to be rigid all the time to get the best out of yourself. Like you can still make the same gains without having a negative experience. Like if an experience is starting to go negative or you feel like maybe this isn't the ideal the ideal place to be right now, you just call an audible. That's a beautiful thing about it.
You don't have to stick to the playbook,
it.
Right?
No, you don't. Yeah. You can switch it up or sometimes it's okay to ride through that giant mud puddle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Big deal. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. It's a good photo.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So out of the kids, is everyone who comes to the program here already been in cycling, or do you ever have kids that have just like come in and say, I've ridden a bike when I was little, but I'm interested in mountain biking now?
No, we do. We have loads of students like that every year.
Right on. Yeah.
And that's a part of it too, is like just being inclusive. Mm-hmm. And you know, we having the staff to support the different, you know, the wide variation of abilities.
Right.
And that's a big part of it. The wide variation of abilities and understanding that we're going to break into groups and these guys are going to progress, but every year the progression is so rapid that within, you know, 3 or 4 weeks they're doing proper rides and you're not having to give as much like reinforcement. And
so with this travel team that you rides for Gould, do you ever see yourself as a young kid in these guys when they're out there riding, guys and girls when they're out there riding?
Just to be frank. Yeah. It's pretty interesting. One of my favorite experiences is to, you know, you go to this event, you're there, everybody's supporting everybody. Then, you know, everybody's hungry after, and you're going to wherever, Subway or Chipotle or whatever. And, you know, and some of my favorite moments are just sitting there talking about the event, and each kid has his own experience and has his own kind of like evaluation of what happened and perception of what happened. And it's just so fun to hear. They just get so into it. Like even these little details. Yeah. It's just enriching.
Yeah. And there's something about the event's done and you're just like, you can just like breathe like that sigh of relief and like the weight's kind of lifted, everything's done, and you can just reflect on all of it. Right.
Yeah. You can reflect but you're having this shared experience, yeah. Right? That's the key. Mm-hmm. These kids are all having this shared experience. Like they race the same course. They might place differently. Like one may be first and one may be 61st.
Right.
But they're still having this similar experience, and they both have the nerves before they start, and you know, and they feel similar, and just this incredible shared experience. And they'll be, you know, like, oh man, I totally took a digger on that route. I went sideways, and then the guy that won is like, oh man, I did the same thing. You know, like, oh, I've ended up falling on my butt. You know, and he gets back up, and it's really cool to hear that like kid that was first race ever in 61st place. Hear that the guy that won that he really looks up to is 2 years older, also fell.
Right.
And picked himself up and won.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just think those are cool shared experiences.
It's a wonderful way to learn is having those close proximity and age mentors that sort of, you know, give you that boost of confidence. Like, oh, I crashed and that's why I'm 61st. Like I crashed and I still got first because I've just been doing it a little bit longer and you can get there too. Right. So,
yeah. Or like you go to this event and you know, some of these guys, guys and girls, you know, it's their first event, first mountain bike race. And like, oh, Tread, how long is this race? It's going to be like 11 miles. And they go, whoa. you're like, dude, you're going to be fine. Yeah. Like, your fitness is pretty good.
Yeah.
And just to see them achieve that and to be, like, drilling up these climbs and responding to, like, your mid-race feedback, you know,
and
jumping out of the saddle and drilling it and then to be just, like, glowing after the event.
Yeah.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah, totally. Do you ever get it? Do you ever switch modes, like play good cop, bad cop, and switch to the bad cop? Or you're like, you have no idea what it's like to ride 100 miles in Leadville and 14,000 feet. Or do you ever pull out those cards?
I haven't that much because like, it's so out of the realm.
Right.
Of, like, it's just mind blowing. I think in a lot of a lot of ways. Yeah.
I mean, for a guy who smiles so much, it's kind of, I couldn't imagine you being the bad cop really that anyway. So.
Yeah. I mean, I can be grumpy. That's for sure. Yeah. Anybody will say I can be grumpy, but I try not to be too much.
That's fair.
It's a constant check.
Yeah. Right on. So if you had to, I mean, I hate and love these kind of questions, these hypotheticals, but if you had to choose between coaching or riding a bike, which would you choose?
Coaching or riding a bike? That's a very good question. I mean, obviously the best scenario is riding a bike while coaching,
sure,
while talking to kids on the bike.
But that wouldn't be a bad, you know, hypothetical. So, yeah, so if you had to choose.
Ooh, you're killing me, man. I don't know. This is going to show my own selfishness here. Self-care and is important to me, and the bike is really important. It would be difficult for me to not be able to ride my bike.
Yeah, yeah.
Or be able to run or ski. You know, it's just about being outside.
Sure.
So I don't know, man. You that's a tough one.
Well, thankfully, it's just a really bad hypothetical question. So
you're like, dude, why are you doing that to me?
Totally. That's because I like people to be a little uncomfortable, you know. Yeah. So, but thankfully, you don't have to. But I mean, I think that was a good answer because, you know, self-care is a super important part. And if you couldn't do that, and let's say you had to pick coaching over riding, I don't think you'd be nearly as good a coach because you're not going to be yourself. So
I wouldn't be. And you know, and it's just these little, I don't know, I just love the little moments. Like, you know, in between, for instance, yesterday we were out on these trails doing this like sprint punch work that was just fun, you know, just drilling it up a climb with these kids, you know, 5 second climb, and they're just having so much fun and growling and yelling, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
And but we're explaining the workout, you know, and everyone's just riding in a small circle. Like it's like every, you know, 12, 15 people all just riding in this little small circle, and I'm like, this is so cool.
That's,
you know,
they're
just like, we're just talking and riding.
Great. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's hard not to smile when you think about those kind of things, right?
Yeah. 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 It's a good place.
Yeah. So back to your riding though. So are you still being competitive with your own mountain biking?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I still compete. I actually still carry an elite license. Last summer was a little bit of a strange summer with some family obligations and some family things happening that, so I didn't race quite as much, but yeah, I still compete. I still generally focus more on the longer gravel events or the 100, you know, the marathon events for me.
You're still traveling for them as well, or pretty much just
typically,
regionally? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I still travel, yeah, significantly. Just last year was a little bit different year,
sure.
Just for a variety of reasons. And you know, taking this position and things changes things. You know, I definitely, there's no doubt I am much more focused on coaching than racing at this point.
Yeah.
It's more fulfilling for me right now. You know, I think I'll continue to race, and I'll always continue to ride my bike and ride my bike hard and do my own kind of like intervals, not intervals, but, you know, drilling climbs and going up climbs and enjoying that. But I'm at a point where coaching is much more fulfilling.
Yeah, that's great. Which kind of, you know, goes back to my weird hypothetical question in a weird way, but was there any back in your, previous racing years or was there a race that particularly stood out as like your most fun experience that you've ever had? Or maybe experience that was better once you got there than you ever expected?
Yeah. I mean, one of the cool things about mountain bike in these marathon races, they take you to some pretty cool places. You know, often they're very remote or relatively remote. And, you know, you're camping or you're doing something like that. And I probably one of my favorite events, and I would advocate for this race with anyone. It's called Pierre's Hole in Grand Tahree, Wyoming.
Okay.
Or it might be Idaho, but it's on that, you know, that Grand Teton, that Teton border there. And it's a beautiful high alpine single track race. And you know, and I saw another bear there, you know, I ended up, you know, it's loads of climbing. It's just loads of single track, but it's just the overlook, the vista and the quality of the single track. To me, that's what stands out from the race. I mean, I did win the race, which is kind of cool too, to go to altitude, you know, cause it's at 8,000 feet.
Right.
And to actually go there and race against people that have grown up at altitude and know the trails and have a good day. It's a lot of those type of experience, like going to Virginia or going to, you know, Georgia and competing in these events that are, you know, they just get you out there and they take you away from normal life.
Yeah, right. And then and now you get to introduce this to a whole new generation of riders.
Oh, which is pretty cool. Awesome. And a lot of these guys, they've never had someone in their life that's like understood racing and kind of to get them excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, to get them excited about traveling to a cool event or traveling and going to do some kind of event, you know, in Georgia or in, you know, in Tennessee or something. And I just think it's a, you know, to be able to talk with them and getting these students to a place where they can conceptualize going and racing a 50-mile race.
Right.
Like, that's pretty cool.
It is,
you know, where they're strong enough to be able to do it.
Yeah, it was never even on the radar. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't even know there was such a thing as, like, I guess I knew there was bike races, you know, Tour de France or something like that. But that was it. And so to see this, you know, come in here at Gould and see all these bikes everywhere and know you have this amazing team you're building out, I'm a little bit jealous that it wasn't in part of my life back then. But at the same time, I look back at my history of riding bikes as a kid, and it was fantastic. Wouldn't change it for the world, but it's pretty cool to see how there's more avenues for kids these days to actually see biking as something besides just a recreational way to get from one place to another, you know?
Absolutely. And one of the positives, and, you know, one of the positives, and it's also a negative here, it can be, you know, contrived as a negative, is, you know, we are Gould Academy. We're a private liberal arts school.
Right.
And it can be cost prohibitive for a lot of people. And, and that's, I trying to keep it as inclusive as we can, but also understanding that, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
But, you know, we're giving these kids an amazing experience, but
unfortunately,
we can't give every kid that experience, which would be really cool.
Yeah, but it would be. I mean, unfortunately, that is the kind of the way of the world, but there's a lot of opportunities out there. People just need to sort of seek them out. There's a lot of people I've talked to even on this podcast, like Bo Lambert, who has the First Push Syndicate, that he helps, you know, the non-private school kids getting on bikes or
absolutely.
Whatever. So it's, you know, thankfully there's a lot of really great opportunities out there for those as well. So
there are. And one thing that I'm big on is, you know, a lot of like the syndicate kids or some of the other privateer kids, we'll call them, you know,
exactly,
they're racing by themselves, is I'm always open to them traveling with us or going to an event with us or kind of including them when we go to an event, meeting up. It's lonely, you know, it's lonely if you're just, and you know, nothing against dads, but if you're just there with your dad,
right? Yeah.
It's a different experience.
Absolutely.
You know? So
usually it can turn into, like, you know, when you're 15 years old, it's like, ends up becoming some kind of argument of some kind,
no
matter how wonderful your dad is. You know, I remember as being a kid and for some reason just being angry. You know what I mean? That's what happens
when
you're a 15-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, but any advice for people out there that have never considered racing bikes, but they like to ride bikes?
Yeah. I mean, racing's a special breed. You know, it's when you start racing, you start taking things, you start looking at things that are out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're training and just riding your bike, everything's under your control, essentially. Well, you know, within reason.
Right.
But then you get into a race, you start racing, and it's there's not much that's in your control anymore, unless you're, you know, so much, if you're just like by far the best rider or something, and, you know, which that's not even that fun.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
So like, you know, I think in terms of advice, people getting into racing is like, learn to embrace the fact that you can't control everything.
Yep. That's a good piece for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, and control what you can control your bike, your parts, like how you eat that day, you know, things like that. Like you can control if you're positive or negative.
Yep.
But you can't control what's happening around you and what the other riders and racers are doing. So I think that that's a really good takeaway, is to be like okay with giving up control.
Yeah.
And to understand that it's okay to be a little off balance. Yeah. Like, it's okay to be a little nervous. It's okay to be a little off balance. Don't ever think about results. You know, think about the tasks. Break the task aspect into small pieces. And then as you grow, your results will come.
Mm-hmm. And go, and back to the sort of the beginning of the podcast, and just have fun, just smile as you're doing it, and you're going to see better results whether you win or not. Better results in your mental state at the very least. So
absolutely, and you're going to be a lot more fun to be around.
Yeah, totally. At the Subway or the Chipotle or wherever you're at the end of the race.
Yeah.
So.
I think what ends up, people just get too caught up in results.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm guilty. You know, years I've come to a place where I'm okay with it now.
Yeah, right.
but it certainly can be overwhelming when you get this expectation in your brain, right? Yeah. You know, that anytime you start putting numbers on your bike, there's an expectation. And I think that those expectations, especially for a 15-year-old that doesn't have a lot of doesn't have a lot of experience, it can be hard.
Yeah.
So part of my goal as a mentor and coach is to just provide a lot more of that background.
Right.
And help them understand, like, it's okay to be nervous.
Yeah.
everyone else is. And it's okay to like feel like you're not, you know, have that race anxiety, because everyone else at this race does too. Even though you feel like you're the only one that has it, every single person here does too.
Yep, right.
You know, you're not alone in this.
I did my one and only race at the CBCC this year.
Oh, cool.
And I did say the 25K, and I was a little nervous before because I'd never done a mountain bike race. I've never even done a group ride with more than, you know, 15 people. So, you know, and then right at the very beginning, I did a little video of it, but I said basically, you know, why am I nervous about this? I'm just going for a fun ride on trails I know with like 500 of my 500 friends who are all having a good time too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and it literally just that mental change of state, it helped me. You know, I had way more fun.
It's brilliant, yeah.
And you still just cramped like, up like crazy, but I had a lot of fun.
Well, you overextend your fitness, you right. cramp up. Yeah, right. That's totally. Part of it.
Yeah, totally.
That's that whole like overcoming obstacle thing, yeah, right? Yeah. You know, but no, it's like you're just going and pedaling hard with some buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what it's about. You're yeah. going and challenging yourself and pedaling hard with some buddies.
I feel like that's probably a good spot to sort of close this fun conversation out. But before I let you go, is there anybody you want to say hi out there to, or anything you want to plug, or ways that people can follow along with your racing or Gould stuff?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we've at Gould especially, I mean, we've really started to get a lot more kind of content. I mean, the kids just love it, you know, especially the Enduro crew. So we do have Gould, you know, Gould Enduro Instagram, which is really fun. I also wanted to thank like one of the big supporters we have here is Allspeed has recently moved into Bethel, and Chris, you know, Chris is a really good friend of mine, and Jerry and Carrie, who run the shop, we've become
fantastic
really good
for, people. Yeah.
Yeah, they're fantastic, and I just, you know, I want to thank them for the support as well. They've really kind of helped us get started and helping us with gear and helping us with bikes, and you know, and honestly, I want to thank Gould. I want to thank the administration for supporting us. And listening to me when, with regard to hiring full-time coaches and building the infrastructure to have a successful program.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, even if you have 20 kids on the mountain, you have to have four coaches.
Right.
Like you just need to, you know, with the variation and abilities and things. And I mean, their support has been fantastic. And you know, I hope we repay them by growing this team to 100 kids. You know? Right.
I'm sure you will. I mean, the excitement around it and your energy and your drive is just gonna, you know, hopefully just make it go exponential, and they'll see everything come back from it. So, I mean, happy kids being, you know, doing healthy things, and you know,
they are so stoked.
Yeah, that's great.
It's just super fun.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for so much of what you're doing and helping these kids get on bikes and inspiring everybody else to be out there and ride and stuff like that. And thanks for inviting me into your little office here today and talking about bike stories. So
fantastic. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much. So anybody out there, if you have some fun stories you want to share, love to hear from you. Or if you have just a short little story you want to share, I'm starting a new little thing called I Ride a Bike Bike Shorts. And you can find me on the website iRideABike.com, or you can follow along on social media, Instagram and Facebook at iRideABike. Until next time, then, ride safe and ride happy.
Cool. Yeah.
Take me back to the times when we would grab our bikes and ride the days into the night. Though our eyes would soon be open for the moment we were golden.
This has been a production of iRide LLC. For more information, please visit iRideABike.com. Theme song by Spencer Albee. Want to hear more? Enter @SpencerAlbee on socials and streaming platforms.